This audio file is copyrighted 2008 by AboutFaxNet and its licensors. All rights are reserved.
Today our guest is the renowned physicist and educator, Dr. Ronald Mallette. It's a pleasure to have you here, Doctor.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you very much. I understand that a movie is being made about your life. Could you tell us about it?
Sure. It's really one of the heights of my personal and professional life. I've written a book called Time Traveler, which is a memoir about my journey through time and why I became interested in time travel, and also talks about the basis, the scientific basis for it. It's a general book for the public, and the gifted filmmaker Spike Lee became interested in writing, in wanting to make a feature film of it, and it was one of those things that completely, you know, I just didn't anticipate it happening. He teaches film at New York University. And two of his graduate students found out about my book, and they read it and brought it to his attention. And he was giving a major talk at the University of Connecticut, that's where I work. And the department called me and said, the filmmaker Spike Lee would like to talk to you. And I thought that they were actually joking at first. And he emailed me and said that he'd like to talk with me. And we spent a couple of hours in you know, talking about my work and my life, and I gave him a copy of my book, and he was going back to Italy to finish filming his film, which is now out, Miracle of Santa Ana. And the thing is that when he came back, he said, this is a great book. He said, I'm going to make a feature film of it. And then it was like Hollywood, I'm going to have my people contact your people. And we actually signed a contract back in June, and I just talked with him a few weeks ago after the premiere of his movie, and he said that he was now actively working on the script, so he'll be co-writing and directing. He'll be directing the movie for it, and as I said, it's going to be very exciting. I think it'll be it's exciting for me personally, but I think it's going to be something that's going to be fascinating for the general public, and so I'm really looking forward to see what this is going to be like in his hands. And as I said, it's going to be a regular feature film.
I'm looking forward to it, too.
Thank you.
Can you tell us about the time machine you're designing?
Sure. The thing is that my work, and this is really important, is based on Einstein's theories of relativity. That's really essential to realize. That's why I take it seriously, as well as my colleagues. And what it is that I have found is that gravity can actually change time in Einstein's theory. That is to say that according to Einstein, the stronger gravity is, the more time will slow down. And this is actually something that has been demonstrated experimentally. As a matter of fact, the GPS satellites, which I can go into a little bit more detail later, but the thing is that they have clocks on them, and they've actually found that those clocks have been affected by the fact that they're at a very high altitude where gravity is weak, and they're actually running faster than clocks here at the surface of the Earth. So we do know that that's a real effect, and what I found was that, everyone thinks of matter as being creating gravity. You know, the Earth creates gravity, which keeps us on the Earth, and the Sun creates gravity, which keeps the Earth in orbit around it, and so on. But in Einstein's theory, not only can matter create gravity, but light can create gravity. And light doesn't have mass, but light can create gravity, and it's actually due to its energy. And you can begin to see my reasoning that if gravity can affect time, and light can create gravity, then light can affect time. So my breakthrough was realizing that you can manipulate time by using light. And what I found, you know, specifically is that if you create a circulating beam of light, and this can be done in a number of different ways. You can actually bounce light off mirrors, or you can have intersecting light beams. You can get light to go around in a path, or you can make a loop out of light. Okay. And the point is that when you do that, when you get light to go around in a loop, it actually can cause space and time to become twisted. And there's actually a pretty easy way of visualizing what I mean by this twisting of space and time. If you, let's say a simple analogy is a cup of coffee. Imagine you have a cup of coffee sitting in front of you right now. And think of that coffee and the cup as being like empty space. And think of your spoon as being like a circulating light beam. Okay, what happens if you take the spoon and stir the coffee? Well, the coffee starts swirling around. Okay. Well, that's what the circulating light beam is doing to empty space. Just like the spoon, the circulating light beam is causing empty space to swirl around. Now you might say, well, if it's empty space, how do I, you know, see it swirling around? Well, let's go back to the coffee. If you put a sugar cube in the coffee, then you take the spoon and start stirring the coffee around, what happens? The sugar cube gets dragged around by the coffee. So you could know that the coffee is being dragged, is moving around, just by looking at the fact that the coffee is dragging the sugar cube around. In a case of empty space, the thing that plays the role of the sugar cube is a subatomic particle that's called a neutron. A neutron is a part of every atom. And if we put the neutron into the empty space, then as the circulating light beam is stirring the space will actually drag the neutron around, just like the coffee is dragging the sugar cube around. So even though we can't directly see the empty space being dragged around, we can see the neutron being dragged around. So we know that that space is being stirred up. Now, here's the key. In Einstein's theory, whatever it is you do to space also happens to time. What this means is that if I take, if I think of time as being a straight line, this is the way in which we live through time. In other words, if you imagine that a straight line in time, and yesterday was the past, and you're moving along that line to today, and then you continue along that line to tomorrow, to the future. So all of us, even though we're unconscious of it, we all are swept along from this, on this timeline, from the past to the present to the future. Now, the point is that in Einstein's theory, space and time are linked to each other. So whatever I do to space also happens to time. That means that if I stir space strongly enough, what will actually eventually happen is that timeline will actually be turned into a loop. And I think you can begin to see what's going to happen then. If I've made that line into a loop, in other words, connected at the top and the bottom of the line, then as I move from the past along that line to the present, to the future, as I continue along that timeline, I move from the future back into the past. Mm-hmm. So by stirring space, I can eventually turn time into a loop. And along that loop in time, I can go back into the past. And that's my theory.
Do you think that different intensities of light would make a difference?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the greater the intensity of the light, the greater the stirring of space that I'm talking about. But it also, the equations say that it's more than just simply the stirring of the space. It's actually the size of the loop. It turns out that the smaller the loop is, interestingly enough, the stronger the stirring becomes in the region where the loop is being, you know. So the thing is that that's one of the reasons why the thing that we're trying to do, and that my work is trying to do, is we're not trying to send human beings, I should point that out.
Right.
We're not trying to send human beings back in time, but only subatomic particles and information. And so the size of the device is going to be quite small and to do that. And the information that we're sending is going to be in the forms of like bits of information that you could actually encode on the elementary particles and actually send that back as a sort of a coded message that one could interpret in the past with suitable receiving equipment as information.
Well, you know, it's funny. I wasn't planning on asking a couple of these questions, but you got me so interested here. Do you think that you could ever get a light that would be intense enough where you wouldn't have to even spin it around?
No, the thing is that it's actually the circulation of the light that's doing it. No, that's the point. I mean, you actually, the greater the intensity, the better. But the circulation of the light is important because that stirring of space actually is what leads eventually to the twisting of time. And the equations directly show that. In other words, the equations show the link between the twisting of space and the twisting of time. So so even if you, increasing the intensity will definitely help, but you still have to have that circulation of the light.
Every Star Trek fan has seen episodes where time travel was accomplished by accelerating to extreme speeds by heading towards the sun, and then pulling out at the last moment and making an instant stop. Do you think there could be any truth to the fact that if a body can accelerate to several times the speed of light and then pull to a stop, that this could disturb the fabric of space and possibly cause some sort of time event?
Well, the problem with that is the fact that we can't, it's not possible to even accelerate objects to the speed of light because there's a law of physics that prevents you from doing that. And, you know, there's a tendency to think of this speed limit, in other words, the fact that light, nothing can travel faster than the speed of light, as being something like the sound barrier, because people say, well, you know, we broke the sound barrier eventually, so why can't we break the light barrier? Well, the light barrier isn't a barrier in a normal sense. It's actually built into the very fabric of mass and energy and its relationship to space and time. And I can actually illustrate very simply why it is that we can't reach the speed of light. And it's based on one of the most famous equations, the fact that the equation that every school child knows, equals mc squared. You know, imagine that you have, you know, something that you're trying to push along the table. And, you know, think of anything, a book that you're trying to push along the table. In order to get that book to move along the table, in other words, to get it from going to rest and to a certain speed, you have to give it energy. Okay. Now, normally, in ordinary physics, the more energy you give to an object, the faster you'll get it to go. But in Einstein's theory, there's more to it than that. Remember the equation equals mc squared? Well, that equation can be read both ways. People usually think of it as being a little bit of matter creates a lot of energy. But it also can be read in the direction that energy can create mass. That's important because that means that as you're pushing the book, not only are you getting it to go faster, but a little bit of that energy that you're giving to push the book goes into increasing the mass of the book, you see. Mm-hmm. What that means is that the book becomes more massive. That means it becomes harder to push it. And that means that you have to give it more energy to get it going faster. But as you push with more energy not only goes into increasing the speed of the book, but it also goes into making the book even more massive. What you find eventually is that as you try to get that book to go at the speed of light, the amount of energy that you have to give becomes infinite. In other words, it becomes more energy than is possible in the entire universe. In other words, it becomes an infinite amount. So that's the reason why. It's actually the basic law equals mc squared is the reason why we cannot get an object, a massive object, to go at the speed of light. So we can never get it to go at the speed of light. Now, the thing is that one of the things that they talk about in Star Trek, and I don't know whether it's intentional or not, is this whole notion of warp, okay?
Right.
Eventually, when we do try to get interstellar travel, I do believe that we're going to have to use Einstein's theory of general relativity, which says that we can warp space and time with matter, and that this warping of space and time will allow us to create things like wormholes and bending of space. And this warping of space could possibly allow us to get from one place to another faster than we would if we were trying to go at the speed of light.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually, this notion of warping space and time is something that is going to be, but trying to go faster than the speed of light, that will never work.
Mm-hmm. During World War II, the Germans were experimenting with a bell-type device. Most people believe that these were anti-gravity experiments. Could they have been experiments in time travel, do you think?
Well, I mean, the problem I don't think so. I mean, unless the Germans, you know, we could find documents that directly show that that's what they were trying to do. There have been speculations about the Germans trying to do time machine projects. I actually heard people talk about that. The problem is that if you look at their lack of success in their atomic bomb project, I mean, they compared to what we were doing, they were not getting very far at all. It seems to me highly unlikely that they would have been successful at something like a time machine type of development, which would require vastly more sophisticated technology than was capable than they had at that time. I mean, so as I said, unless somehow we uncover, surprising, explicit documents that show that they were doing that at what stage they were doing it, I actually find that highly unlikely.
Do you agree with the following statement? If someone was to travel into the future, people there might have to keep them there to avoid them gaining technology to take back to the past and thus changing that future. And wouldn't the fact that they are kept change our future?
Well, the thing is that they might try to keep someone from coming back if that was a scenario that happened, but the thing is that it's likely that they wouldn't be able to prevent the information from being sent back, even if they kept the person there. Remember, I was saying that, I think that the revolution in time traveling with time machines is going to be sending information back to the past rather than people, and that's something that's much less difficult to control. Mm-hmm. I mean, much more difficult to control trying to do that, to prevent someone from doing that. So, but yes, there is a possibility that if someone sent information back to the past, they definitely would change the future, because the future would now be an altered future in which technologies are present and accelerated technologies that weren't present in that particular future. Now, that brings up the question, can we really change the past and the paradoxes that are associated with that? And that's a major question. I mean, the so-called grandfather paradox, which is a classic example of that. That is to say that if we go back into the past and do something like preventing our grandparents from meeting each other, then they don't have our parents, and if they don't have their parents, our parents, they don't have us. So how can we go back and do that? That's the classic one. And, of course, physics offers a way out of that, which could even be in connection with this example you were giving about, bringing technology back. And that is to say, there's this whole notion, the other pillar besides relativity in physics is quantum theory. And quantum theory opens up the possibility of parallel universes. This is a very real possibility, even though it sounds bizarre. It says the notion is that our universe may not just simply be alone. It may be just simply one of many parallel universes, only similar to ours, but only differ very, very slightly. And that could, in fact, resolve this paradox, because what it says essentially is that when you go back into the past, you arrive in the past of a parallel universe, and in that parallel universe, you can alter things, and that will lead to a whole new development in that universe. However, you do not alter the universe that you came from. So the original universe you came from goes on its way and leads to the technologies and everything that were the original development. Now, of course, we don't know which scenario is going to really happen, whether it's parallel universes or whether the universe is determined or whether we really affect the entire universe. That's only going to be known once we actually do the experiment.
Right. The new CERN Hadron Collider is going to be capable of incredible energies. Do you envision that any of the experiments there might give us insight into new methods that might apply to perfecting time travel?
It's potentially possible. I mean, the thing is that whenever you're entering into new domains of energy, new realms, it's impossible to predict. Many things that they're looking for, I mean, Large Hadron Collider was actually developed to look for specific elementary particles, but the thing that physics we have found before, and it's likely we're going to find again, gives us surprises that we didn't anticipate. So it is possible, but it's hard to tell until they start running the experiments continuously whether that's going to happen. But there is potential that it could lead us to new insights that might help us develop effectively time travel, yes.
If an event changed our past timeline, would we remember the original timeline and the new one?
Well, it would depend on who's doing it. And the point that you're bringing up is a subtle one. The reason why I say that is that the time traveler will remember. They will not, their memories won't change. They will find themselves in a world in which other people won't remember the things that they remember. So the point is that in Einstein's theory, there's always two observers. You're always talking about two different observers, one who's traveling and one who isn't. And the thing is that this means that the person who's actually going back in time and changing things, they will keep the memories they have. Those won't alter. However, the world in which they are affecting, those things will alter, and the people there, you know, will remember different things from the time traveler.
I've heard it a million times, and I'm sure you have. People like to say that if time travel was possible, we would have met many time travelers already. Even Stephen Hawking stated that. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, the thing is that that's very actually simply answered, and it's interesting that it's overlooked. You have to remember that, for example, even in the work that I'm doing, the circulating light is what's creating the loops in time. Okay, that means that if I turn the device on today, for example, and I left it on for 100 years, someone 100 years from now could come back 25, 50, 75 years, all the way back to the point where the machine was turned on. But they can't go earlier than that because it's the machine that's creating the effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, consequently, that means that a time traveler has to have a device back where, you know, they're coming to,
right,
in order for them to materialize into this. So the answer to that question is actually very straightforward. The reason why we're not inundated with time travelers from the future is that a human-sized time machine hasn't been built yet, because that would have to have been built now for the time traveler to come back. And in fact, one of the things that I tell my students is that if anyone tells you, you know, I'm a time traveler from the future, I always say, be polite with them and say, oh, that's nice, can you show me your machine? Because this holds for any real time machine. Now, it doesn't matter whether you're talking about wormholes or cosmic strings, it's the phenomena that's creating the effect, and you can't go back earlier than when the phenomena occurred.
Well, I can't help but ask you the following question now. You piqued my interest. If you do design a time machine that will send data into the past,
right,
do you expect to start receiving data from the future?
Well, no, not automatically. That's the other thing. I mean, you have to remember that there has to be intentionality. What I mean by that is that you cannot just simply receive information. You have to have a receiver to do that. So specifically, in other words, it's like your radio. I mean, in other words, radio waves are around us all the time. We don't know that. The only way we're able to detect radio waves is with a radio receiver. And even then, we have to tune it to a particular station to get, you know, specific, you know, information. So the thing is that it's the same here. If I want to get information from the future, I will have had to set up with my experiment a specific kind of detector to detect the information that I plan in the future to send to myself. Then I would expect to get information out.
Well, the reason I asked you that question was, if you perfect that machine, won't it become an historical event that will be well known to everybody in the future?
Oh, it would be, but nevertheless, I would still have had to test it.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? And the only way that I could test it is to send myself specific information. It's like
right. The
Alexander Graham Bell thing. You know, I mean, in other words, I would have to have a specific detector attached to the device, and then I would have to, you know, this would be happening in steps. So yes, people in the future would know about it, but for me here in the present, I would have had to have had a specific detector, and then have a controlled experiment in which a couple of weeks from now, I was sending data back to myself of a specific sort, you know,
mm-hmm.
saying, you know, hi, Ron, it worked, you know, or something,
right.
You know, that I would be able to, you know, interpret. So it, as I said, it just won't, when I turn it on, nothing's going to happen unless I have set things up with a specific type of detector to detect something.
Isn't it true that a time machine would be more dangerous than a nuclear weapon, because anyone that had it could go back into the past and maybe kill off world leaders and others that they deemed a threat?
Oh, potentially it could be. But that's so, I mean, the thing is that you have to remember that any technology is vastly, you know, potentially extremely dangerous. I mean, all we have to do is think of aircraft. which, you know, the benefits of those are too many for me to even enumerate. But all we have to do is think of 9/11 to see, you know, the consequences of that. So the point is that the key here is regulation. In other words, this technology is not going to be technology that you're going to be able to go to Walmart and pick up. You know, I mean, it's going to require both sophisticated technology and it's going to require control. And that's where both the public and the government has to take part in. So, yes, there is that potential danger, but that's potential danger with any technology whatsoever. And there will definitely have to be regulation.
Well, what do you foresee as being the major dangers in time travel?
Well, I mean, just the use, misuse of it. I mean, it's possible to send back information that could be used for either good or ill. And that, as I said, is so even now in our everyday world. So that to me is you know, this is the age of information. And that's why I said that this whole idea of sending information back, this would just be a quantum leap in the information revolution. So to me, it would be the misuse of information that one could, that's what I see as a potential danger.
Do you think there might be a chance that if someone attempts to go back into the past, they will get younger as they travel backwards?
No, according to Einstein's theories, what will happen is that the person who's doing the time traveling, whether it's into the future or into the past, will age at the normal rate. Their timeline just will have separated from everyone else's timeline, but within their timeline, they will age at a normal rate. So if they go back into the past, they will find themselves, they will meet a younger version of themselves, or they could meet their grandparents or something like that, but assuming that the machine had been built, you know, then.
Right.
But they will have aged at a normal rate. There's no way that they can control their rate of aging, just their rate of aging relative to everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Is time real, and does it flow only in one direction like we think? And does it have a beginning and an end?
Well, it definitely has a beginning. That beginning, as physicists understand it presently, is the Big Bang. People still think of the Big Bang sometimes as an explosion that happened in space and time. And what they have to realize is that, once again, this is based on Einstein's theories, and what we have been able to see measurably from looking at the radiation left over from the Big Bang is that at the Big Bang, not only energy was created in matter, but space and time themselves were created. In other words, at the instant of the Big Bang was the beginning of space and time. So that was the beginning. Now, whether the universe will continue to evolve forever or re-collapse and there will be an end of time, that we only know from observations and seeing whether or not the universe begins to slow down and, you know, start to contract, or whether it keeps expanding forever. But it definitely had a beginning. And it may have a specific end. Now, as far as is time real, yes. I mean, the thing is that it's more than just simply perception. As a matter of fact, the way in which I define time is I think of it as the persistence of existence. And what I mean by the persistence of existence is that things endure. And that is what we actually mean by things happening in time. In other words, you can't have an instantaneous object existing. It has to endure. And so it's actually the persistence of existence is time.
Mm. Do you believe there's a connection between time and parallel universes, if they exist,
of
course?
Yeah, I mean, in fact, that's what I was mentioning earlier with the grandfather paradox. Definitely there could be a connection, and that, in fact, it could lead to the resolution of the so-called grandfather paradox, because one could end up, when one gets back into the past, in a parallel universe, and you could affect that new universe, but you wouldn't affect the original universe. So, yes, that would be the connection.
We have found that antimatter exists, and some people think that anti-time might exist. Do you believe that it does, and if so, what would it be like?
Well, antimatter, yes, that does exist, but anti-time would be the same thing as time, but just backwards. As a matter of fact, interestingly enough, one of the theories that was developed by Richard Feynman, who was really one of the most brilliant physicists that existed in the last century, in the 20th century, he proposed that what we call antimatter, for specifically, in other words, for every particle there's an antiparticle, and the electron is something that's made up of every atom. What we feel is that there's an antiparticle called the positron. We actually do know that these positrons, which are essentially anti-electrons, exist. What Feynman proposed, and he was able to develop a consistent theory to demonstrate that, is that the positron, the anti-electron, can actually be thought of as the electron moving backward in time. And so an electron moving backward in time would look to us like an anti-electron or a positron moving into the future. And the difference between a positron and an electron is that they have exactly the same mass, but the difference in their charge. An electron is a negative charge and a positron is a positive charge. So according to Feynman, when we see anti-electrons or positrons, those are actually electrons that are moving backward in time.
Hmm. Dr. Frank Tipler spoke about building a time machine using a spinning cylinder. He said that if the cylinder is long and dense and spins fast enough about its long axis, then a spaceship flying around the cylinder on a spiral path could travel back in time. Going in the other direction, it could fly forward. He proposes that the limitation to this idea is that matter is not strong enough to construct it. What is your opinion about this?
Well, I mean, I think that Tipler is right. I mean, I think that a long cylinder, there is a possibility. I mean, that's actually been shown. It's based on, Tipler's work is based on work that was done by a man named Van Stockton. And that shows, in fact, that there is a possibility of loops in time existing for a massive rotating cylinder, and that the limitations would be, you know, the stresses of the matter on the matter of the rotating cylinder. So, but that is a possibility.
Many scientists seem to think that any time machine would contain an extremely powerful energy source and some type of spinning device. Could they be barking up the wrong tree?
Oh, no. I mean, that's what, Tipler was saying with that. And as a matter of fact, some of the earlier work, one of the most important pieces of early work was the notion of a rotating universe, which was developed by the mathematician Gödel, who's very important to mathematicians, in fact. But in any case, what he showed was that if the universe were rotating as a whole, it would lead to loops in time. And also, we know that rotating black holes could lead to the possibility of loops in time. So this notion of spinning matter somehow doing it would be, you know, a connection to it. Mm-hmm. And my work is in a different direction. I mean, rather than using matter, I talk about using circulating light. But the circulating light creates the loops in times too. So that's reasonable.
Do you think that there's anywhere in the universe where other dimensions exist where there is no time?
No. I mean, the thing is that, as I said, without time, you wouldn't know that things have to endure in order to exist. So if there's no time, there's no existence.
What about an empty universe?
Well, but it wouldn't be empty. It would be nothing to measure it by. In other words, it has to endure.
Some people believe that there are places on the Earth known as vortexes where time is not the same. Is this a possibility?
I don't think so. I mean, the thing is that at best, the Earth is rotating, and so that actually can affect the rate at which, you know, clocks are and so clocks would be running, you know, because of that rotation of the Earth. But that's what, you know, that there's nothing going to be like a whirlpool in any particular time, any particular place on the Earth. I doubt it. Unless someone, you know, demonstrates this experimentally or has a consistent theory of that. I mean, I'm skeptical.
Some people have had experiences where they felt that time was traveling faster or slower. Do you think that this was due to their imagination or somehow this was true in their particular case?
No, I think that it was, when you say imagination, I don't think that imagination, it could be due to the fact that physiological processes that were going on for them made it seem that way. You know, in fact, Einstein facetiously said that when someone asked him about, you know, relativity, you know, he said, well, you know, if you... And this is remembering the times that he was talking. He said, if you're talking to, you know, a pretty woman, time seems to go, you know, very, very, very quickly. But if you're sitting on a hot stove, it can appear to go very, very slowly. You know, so, I mean, the thing is that it's that kind of thing. It depends on what's going on in your intention. You know, if you're busy, every one of us has had the experience of time seeming to pass at an unbelievable rate. But if you're bored, it seems to go on forever.
If humans could travel into the past, what do you think it would be like? Do you think that it would seem like the world we are in now, or would it be more of a shadow world where we might be able to see people and events without actually being able to interact with them?
Well, I think that if we were able to go back into the past, we would actually be there. I think that we will actually be able to transport, you know, matter, you know, to the past. We would actually, you know, be there with the people in the past. I think that that's what I suspect would happen, because that's, according to physics, that's what, you know, we could actually move matter from one place in time to another place in time, in space and time.
Mm-hmm. There are those that state that time travel is possible because certain laws of nature prevent paradoxes, and these are the same laws that make light travel in straight lines. Could you clarify this for us?
I mean, the thing is that Einstein's theories are what makes time travel possible, and according to Einstein's theories, if you go fast enough, you can cause time to slow down. And by fast, I mean any speed up to the speed of light, and we actually have demonstrated that. And of course, that's Einstein's special theory of relativity, and we've seen that the faster we've moved clocks, the more they slow down. This has been done in real experiments with atomic clocks on board ordinary passenger jets. We also know that clocks are affected by gravity. The stronger gravity is, the slower clocks go. And once again, we know this effect is real. We've seen the fact that clocks run at a faster rate on board these GPS satellites than they do here at the surface of the Earth. So that's the way in which we really know that you know, time can be affected, and we can travel, at least into the future, doing it. And also, the possibility of going to the past is opened up by Einstein's general theory of relativity, which allows us to manipulate space and time in particular ways.
When Kip Thorne at Caltech discovered that there was nothing in physics that prevented time travel, a lot of scientists were surprised. Were you?
Not really, because once again, what Kip Thorne was basing his statement on was Einstein's theories of relativity, and there's nothing in those theories that prevent time travel. So potentially, it should be possible. I mean, it may be difficult to achieve, but it should potentially be possible.
When the space race first started, there was a lot of secrecy, especially in the old Soviet Union. Cosmonauts were lost, and we didn't find out about it for many years. Could the race towards building an actual time machine have already started somewhere, and could there have been casualties that we don't know about?
Well, I mean, anything's possible. It's hard to speculate about that, because, you know, the thing is that as a scientist, I have to base things on evidence, on real evidence of real things happening. And so if there is this, then, as I said, it would be hard to know, simply because of the fact that we need the specific evidence for that.
What do you estimate the cost will be to build your machine?
Well, the space-twisting portion of it, the initial cost, it would be, I mean, we're talking about just the initial, you know, opening cost is probably about $250,000. That's what we know that we'll need. The total cost of that experiment would probably be about the order of $10 million. That's just the space-twisting portion. How much it will cost for the time-twisting portion, which, as I said, we wouldn't even go to if we don't see the space-twisting portion, that I can't estimate, because that would require us understanding the technologies that would be needed, and that we won't know until we're done with the space-twisting part. But at least that portion of it will cost at least $10 million.
Are you familiar with Novikov?
No, I've heard of Novikov, but I'm actually not familiar with his work.
Oh, okay, I'll skip the next question. Does time... oh, no, I asked you that one already. I'm sorry. What about the thing that Einstein called a spooky action at a distance where two quantum systems seem to be connected? Does this apply to time travel, and would you explain it to my readers?
Well, this spooky action at a distance that Einstein was talking about actually has to do with quantum theory and the relativity. And what he was talking about was the fact that it turns out that if systems are created as a single unit, if you separate those systems, okay, I'm talking about molecules, for example, if you separate this and bring them to two different places, even though they're separated, what we have found experimentally is that what you do on the one system seems to instantaneously affect what's happening at the other system. In other words, the two systems act as though they're still connected to each other, even though they're now separated into two different pieces. And the spooky action at a distance is what Einstein was referring to. It was the fact that when I do something to system A, system B instantaneously responds to it as though the two systems were still connected. And somehow this entanglement is what the term that's used now for this, is the fact that it seems like the two systems are entangled with each other, even though they are now separated. But the key here is that they were once one single unit, and that you essentially split them up and separated them, but they still behave as though they were one single unit. So that's what he's referring to. As far as I know, that doesn't have any direct application to time travel. I mean, that is an effect, and it might, in fact, this particular effect, this spooky action, might lead to the possibility, and in fact, many physicists really believe this, of teleportation. It won't be exactly the form of teleportation that you seen in Star Trek, but it could eventually lead to teleportation. But it doesn't seem to have any direct implication for time travel. Mm.
There are those that think if our universe starts to collapse, the time will run backwards. Do you believe this?
No. It'll run forward. It'll just be the universe collapsing.
Does time repeat itself? Have we all done what we are doing maybe millions of times before? Or is Laflamme correct when he states that this will not happen?
The thing is that I think that the events that have happened to us are, you know, unique events. I think that we have this feeling sometimes of things having been repeated or this sense of deja vu, but I think that this is due to our mind, our brain, and the way in which it functions. And, you know, you have to remember the billions of, the amount of information that we receive and that we don't even process consciously is unbelievable. And the thing is that I believe that when we experience a sense of deja vu, that it has a lot more to do with our brain functioning than it has to do with something that's happening objectively with time out in the world.
Mm-hmm. If you know, at what point are the Russians at in the field of trying to build a time machine? And is there any other country that might be starting such a project?
As far as I know, I'm not aware of what the Russians are doing in this field. They may be working on it, but as I said, once again, unless they share the information out in the open community, such as my work, then it's impossible to know what they're doing or if they're doing this sort of thing.
Could we be wrong about some of the phenomena in space, such as black holes, and could they act as natural time machines in some way?
Well, they definitely. I mean, that's black holes definitely act as natural time machines, because not only, and definitely we know that we're right about black holes. They are definitely collapsed. There's more than just one. We've actually been able to observe many, 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 many black holes, and even at the center of some galaxies. And we do definitely know that they're the result of matter collapsing to a point where the gravity becomes so intense that it pulls light in. That's what we mean by black hole. And it turns out that black holes affect time as well. That is to say that the closer you get to a black hole, the more time slows down. So if someone were to move close enough to a black hole, time for them, and remember, when I say time, I'm talking about anything that measures time. Your heart rate, your metabolism would slow down. So if you got close enough to a black hole, only a few hours may pass for you, but time would be passing at a normal rate everywhere else. 100 years could be passing. So if you left the region, as long as you didn't cross into the black hole, if you left the region near the black hole and came back, you might find that you're only a few hours older, but centuries may have passed. So black holes definitely could be act as natural time machines.
Do you think that we possess anything with enough power to rip the fabric of space and time, or is that an impossibility?
Well, we don't here on the Earth, but definitely things like black holes, in a sense, are, one could think of them as being tears in the fabric of space-time. So things like that, phenomena like that, definitely can occur. But here on the Earth, no, we haven't done that yet.
Before you spoke about warp, some people say that a wormhole might be used to travel through time. What are your feelings on this?
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, the work that's been done by Kip Thorne and mentioned by people like Paul Davies, wormholes definitely have a possibility of being used as time machines. And the problem is, of course, is finding a wormhole and then controlling the wormhole to do that. But the potential is definitely there.
We talk a lot about travel into the past. Do you think that traveling into the future could be a one-way trip? And if so, why?
Well, the thing is that Einstein's special theory of relativity, which says that time slows down for a moving clock, time travel is a one-way trip. That is to say that if you, just on the basis of special theory of relativity, you can only travel to the future because you'd have to exceed the speed of light to get back into the past, and that's not possible based on the laws of physics, equals mc squared. So the thing is that time travel into the future based on speed is a one-way trip, and as I said, we've actually already demonstrated that we can do it only by fractions of a second, just with ordinary atomic clocks on board passenger jets. We've actually been able to show we can move into the future fractions of a second, and things like the LHC, when they speed up these elementary particles, they cause them to live, 8-16 times longer. That means these particles are actually traveling into their future. So that, but it's a one-way trip. But using general relativity, it might be possible to warp space and time in such a way that we can make it a two-way trip. So the answer is that based on Einstein's special relativity, which links time with speed, it's a one-way trip. But with Einstein's general theory of relativity, which has to do with gravity and the warping of space-time, we may be able to make it a two-way trip.
Mm. Have you ever noticed any effects on Earth that could be attributed to time events?
Well, yes, in the sense of gravity. I mean, that's the most noticeable one. Clocks here on the surface of the Earth are running slower than clocks on the GPS satellites. And as I mentioned before, this actually is important because corrections have to be made for that. I mean, they actually have to calibrate these clocks to make on the board the satellites to make sure that they take this effect into account, or we would not be able to find our correct position here on the surface of the Earth. So yes, we definitely have already seen this effect. And also, as I said, with objects moving fast enough aboard satellites, when they're moving fast enough, time slows down. So we definitely have seen phenomena here on the Earth that show that time is affected by things like gravity and speed.
I've heard a moving automobile described as a time machine because you can look out the back and see the past or look out the front and see the future. What do you think about that?
No. It is to the extent that an automobile even is moving through time, and the fact that it's moving at a speed different from the speed that it would have if it's parked, it actually means that the clocks on board your ordinary car actually are running slower. However, the fact that this automobile is moving so slow compared to the speed of light, that effect is so microscopic that it's immeasurable. But because the automobile is moving, time actually is slowing down a little bit.
There have been times when some people have stated that they have seen what they thought was spirits or ghosts. In your opinion, do you think that there is some connection between our current time and past or future times, and what they are seeing as shadows of the past or future?
No, not based on physics. I don't think so. I mean, I don't know what these phenomena may be, but the thing is that I don't think that they're images of the past or future from the standpoint of physics.
Mm-hmm. Strange things have been found that were out of place in time, such as a necklace in a lump of coal or a transistor inside of a rock that was millions of years old. Do you believe that any of this could be the result of time travel?
I'm skeptical. I mean, remember, as I said, I think that not I think, but just based on real time machines, you have to have a device that created the effect. So if these phenomena had occurred somewhere, they would have to have occurred in the neighborhood of some kind of time machine. And that time machine would still have to be, somewhere, somehow a time machine would have had to have been there to have created that particular effect. So unless in those ancient times they had developed technology that we can barely imagine, it seems highly unlikely.
Throughout history, there's always been scientists that ridiculed other scientists for trying to create things that they thought were impossible. Have you ever been ridiculed for your theories?
Well, ridiculed is no. I would say that people are skeptical until I tell them that what I'm doing is based on Einstein's theory. And skepticism is a good thing. And there's also skepticism about, how much energy is going to be needed. And this is technological questions. I mean, for example, the things that, it was brought to the Wright brothers was, is it going to be possible that you're going to need a new type of metal or new, processes in order to do this? I mean, the thing is that a lot of this is going to require technical ingenuity in order to make it happen. But based on the laws of physics, I think that part, as I said, sometimes people are a bit skeptical because they still think time travel is being something that's in the realm of science fiction. But this has been the whole point of my, or I should say part of the point of my book, Time Traveler, is to make people realize that based on real physics, based on the physics of Einstein, and this is the same physics that is explained and given to us things like everything from the laser to nuclear power, that very same theory is the theory that's behind the possibility of time travel. So initial skepticism, I think, is a good and healthy thing. But as I said, once people begin to see that these things are based on real laws of physics and understand the limitations, because there are limitations, then their skepticism usually turns to belief in the possibility.
What thoughts would you like to leave us with on time travel?
Well, the thoughts that I would like to leave with people is the fact that I think that it's important and let's say there's actually two things that I want to leave people with. It's important to realize that whether or not we have time travel, the only thing that we really have, any of us really have, is the present moment in our life. And we need to make the best possible use of that, because ultimately that's really all that we have. But the other aspect is that time travel is going to allow mankind an unprecedented control of their destiny. And I think that that's something that we should all look forward to, be mindful of, and realize that this could lead to a new golden age for the human race.
Well, I want to thank you very much for such an interesting interview.